my dear friends, Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason and feeling well and happy to be with you. I'm especially happy this round because everything else is closed down. And I mean, like my whole schedule for the next 6 weeks has been wiped clean. I'm not traveling. There's no place to go. There's nothing to do except for talk with you. So it's great to be able to have this time to chat about things that that really, really matter. And because what isn't closed down is digital media. I was actually a little concerned whether we're going to get any callers today. I don't know why. It's just because the freeways are clear and the malls are clear and the streets are clear and the toilet paper aisle is totally clear. And so I thought our lines would be clear, too. And then Brooke said, well, they've got nothing else to do now, so maybe more people will be calling the show because a lot of folks are at home, and we've got a number in the queue that I'm looking forward to talking to. So that's really, really good. This reminds me, by the way, that for many of you, this may be a really good time to catch up on podcasts or go back. If you're a newbie to this show and you've listened to a few, you may want to go backwards and listen to other shows that you haven't heard. Many people tell me that once they get on board with a couple of shows, they think, well, I want to catch what I missed over the last 10 years or something like that. And I'm always flattered to hear that, but so this might be a time to do that. I was also thinking, you know, we've got so much stuff on the internet for standard reason. We have podcasts, we have STR Ask, of course, we have all kinds of little videos and training materials. We have courses like the Bible Fast Forward at 8. But 50-minute sessions that really go from Genesis to the time of Jesus, helping you see how it all fits together theologically in a really great way. So these are all things that you could do if you find yourself with a lot of extra time on your hands in light of the kinds of restrictions that we're all facing right now. I'm actually focusing on writing now, doing a lot of catch up on that, and maybe catching up on some things around the house because the kids are there. It's kind of like summer vacation, but there's no vacation, so we're not going anywhere. We're just at home, all of us. And we had to have a little talk last evening, or at least I initiated it, and I said, look, we're all going to be hanging out together for the next month or so, right, till after spring break. And this means we're all hanging out together, and that can sometimes get a little rough. So we need to be more careful than usual, to be kind to each other, and to be considerate and charitable, and those kinds of things, and pray for those who find themselves in a lot of turmoil because of the recent developments. And so we did that. We prayed. And then watched an episode of NCIS or something. I don't know what we did, but we did it as a family. We got El Pollo Loco, which is kind of a takeout chicken thing, and it's really good, and it's not very expensive, and it's pretty healthy. And so this is our preferred takeout, and we sat around TV together. And this is something that you guys can do, too. All right. So, by the way, speaking of podcasts, I want to let you know about a new podcast that is available by a buddy of mine. Many of you know Abdu Murray. He's the executive vice president of Rabbi Zacharias International Ministries, and he's a former law attorney, okay, and also a former Muslim. And as an attorney, he's a sharp thinker. As a Muslim, he was in a contrary worldview to Christianity, and it cost him a lot to make the move. And so many of you know from reading his books about how that took place. And now he's with Rabbi Zacharias to travel around the world speaking at universities. But he is just starting a new podcast, and it's a great idea. The podcast is called The Defense Rests, and it started last week. And let's see, what it does is make the listener part of the jury as he examines the claims for a particular view or objections against the Christian worldview from a legal perspective. Okay, so he's bringing his skills and capability into play for this podcast. And then he subjects those objections or those claims to the rules of evidence and the laws of procedure that would be used in a courtroom. So what he does is play a clip first from an atheist or a skeptic or a Muslim or some other critic, and then examines that claim in the light of the kind of scrutiny it would get in a trial setting. So again, the podcast is called The Defense Rests. This is Abdu Murray, and you can find it at the RZIM website. That would be rzim.org/listen/The Defense Rests. And there are hyphens between the defense and defense rests. So it's the hyphen defense hyphen rests. Shouldn't be hard to find, though, when you go to rzim.org. But Abdu Murray and his new podcast, The Defense Rests. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Okay, just wanted to let you know that. Also, a big day yesterday. Because yesterday morning was the launch of my very first PragerU video, and I'm really, really excited about that. I say very first because I hope it's not going to be the only one I do, and I've been invited to consider some other options, and we've been talking about that a little bit. But PragerU is a website, P-R-A-G-E-R. U, the letter U, as in Prager University. It's a website you can go to find 5-minute mini courses, so to speak, what you aren't going to learn in college, because in college you can learn principally a leftward-leaning view on just about everything. And so what Dennis Prager, who is the host of this, or the founder of this, the internationally known speaker and radio broadcast host with the Salem Network, Dennis has a number of years ago, maybe 5, 6, 7, or 8 years ago, something like that, kind of initiated this enterprise with these short videos, 5 minutes long, on lots of issues. Now there's more than 300 of them. They are averaging 1 billion hits or views a year. Pretty amazing. And it's really building momentum. But there's a plethora of people, speakers, talent, whatever, who have made contributions. And I was asked last year to do something. So what I did was The Intolerance of Tolerance. Now, I have a talk by that name. I've written an article. It's on our website. I think it first appeared in Breakpoint a number of years ago. And it is meant to show the shell game of tolerance that the left, that is the politically incorrect crowd, is playing. And by the way, when I do a video for PragerU, okay, from that community's perspective, we are speaking regarding the harm of the left. I'm not, and so I mention the left a lot, but I'm not taking on any political party or anything like that. I don't mention that kind of stuff, and that's not my point. The point is the politically correct crowd, whoever they happen to be in, whatever political party they happen to be in. And you have encountered these folks before, people who attack you for holding a view that's inconsistent with political correctness. And then they attack you, not the view. And they call you names like intolerant. And that's what this video is meant to expose, how that takes place. Those of you who read the article or seen my talk or whatever, or heard me talk about it on the air, you get the general sense of it. What I like about the PragerU video is that in 5 minutes, I kind of cover the bases. And there's animation involved and everything. It's a great learning experience. And if you like my video, you might listen to some others. They cover a wide variety of topics, some religious, and the religious topics are general religious because Dennis is a practicing Jew, and but he is very friendly to evangelicals. It's not the kind of environment, though, where I can make the case for Christianity. That's not what it is. But I can make cases that relate to the issue of communicating Christianity clearly in our culture, and the intolerance of tolerance is one of them. And one of the things I try to show in that vid is that tolerance is a one-way street when it comes to the left, and I explain exactly how that works. So you want to find it? Very easy. Go to PragerU.com, PragerU, as in the letter, .com. And the page there in the left-hand side, it'll say latest PragerU video. And there it is, the intolerance of tolerance. Just punch that button and off you go. And you can watch the whole thing. Just so you know, in the first 24 hours, we had 250,000 views on that vid. I mean, that really, really wow. I'm thrilled. Okay. Now, I'm not alone in that. I mean, there are people who have had million views in a day. So I'm not trying to wave my own flag, but I am saying I'm really happy about it. And so if you like it, you can forward the idea to others and your tribe and let them know about it. So that's a big deal. So we're pretty excited about that. I do have one that I've written, put together. I'm still trying to persuade them. And this one is called How Evil Proves God. I like that title, don't you? I think it's really provocative, especially for those who are kind of outside of our circles, because I've talked about this notion a lot. And I have been able to develop this idea that the notion of evil requires that a God exist, even to make the notion itself intelligible. So I'd love to do a 5-minute video on it, and I've got the basic plan in place, and we'll just have to see if that would be number two. I'm hoping that will be the case. Now, I want to comment on something from last week, because last week I talked a bit about my thoughts on the coronavirus, COVID-19. And I listened back again to that entire commentary this morning because it has created a bit of a stir in some concerned people, and I respect that. But as I listened, I realized, this was my sense at the time too, that my basic point was that we should just calm down and not panic and try to get a clear view on what we're facing. And then I read a piece from an epidemiologist who is an infectious diseases specialist. So I wasn't just kind of offering my view. I was drawing from someone who had bona fides in the area. Although I'm acknowledging now, and I'll say more about this in a moment, that there's a divergence of views on this issue. So this was one. Okay. And then I close by saying that his comments made sense to me. And I only want to make really two observations about my comments last week, because I'm not going to continue to pursue that issue here. First, please remember that when I tape, when I record the show, I record two shows on Tuesday. One show, the first hour, goes out on Wednesday. The second show, the second hour, goes out on Friday. So there's a 3-day, actually de facto 4-day delay from new information that's available for when I give my commentaries on Tuesday. I'm working from information from the weekend or before, or possibly on Monday, okay? And so my comments were made prior to the announcement by the president that there were going to be more aggressive restrictions placed on travel and meeting together and stuff like that, state of emergency kind of concerns that happened on Thursday or Friday, later in the week, whatever it was, okay? So keep in mind, and then my Friday, my comments get posted, and for many people, they thought that my point of view was much too tepid in light of the recent developments. All I'm saying is keep in mind that those recent developments had not recently developed at the time that I made that podcast. Okay, so that's the first thing. And the second thing is that I've done quite a bit of reading since then, especially given the fact that a number of people responded to me in friendly ways with concerns that I wasn't up to speed on the latest research, etc. And things could be more dire than I thought they would be, or from what my comments indicated last week. What I've learned, that there's a diversity of opinion on the gravity of the situation. I mean, just to put it most simply, I'm not even taking sides here. I'm just saying there's a diversity of opinion. And so it may turn out that things may be more serious than I intimated a week ago. So I'm going to personally apologize if I made the situation sound less dangerous than it actually is, than we know it to be now. And I'm just going to leave it at that. My view now is to let the experts work it out and let you as individuals decide for yourself instead of offering my own view, because my own view may not be adequately informed. And I don't want to give out bad advice. My own view actually changes as more information becomes available. I'm going to stick to my strength, and that is, well, you know what that is, apologetics and theology and how it touches to current ethical issues, and not give opinions about these kinds of things that are somewhat controversial, and there's conflicting information coming from different sources. Okay, so I'll just leave it at that. Let me look at the time here. I got lots of people on the phone, and I do want to, maybe I'll save this for second hour. I have some more things that I want to say about this, just as a general reflection, general comments about facing upheavals like this that we're in as followers of Christ, and also as an organization like Stand to Reason trying to have an impact. Because I'm sure that some of you are wondering, gee, how's it going at STR? And how is this affecting what you do? And how, I mean, what about these? Nobody's flying, right? So we're grounded. And I just got another notification that I got canceled on an event in May. And this is based on a local government restrictions. And so, properly, the churches or the organizations that are involved in this are following the restrictions and making the changes that are necessary to be consistent with what the public health authorities have in mind. And so that's what they're doing. That's what we're doing here too. But maybe at the beginning of next hour, I'll get in a little bit and more personal about Stand to Reason and stuff, and bring you up to date on that, okay? What we're going to do now is take a break and then get to your calls on Stand to Reason.
Hi, I'm Alan Schliemann. Should Christians divide over homosexuality? Or is this a topic that we can just agree to disagree on? Find out my answer in the latest episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud with Alan Schliemann. Look for it on iTunes or the top of the homepage at str.org.
Are you looking for a way to be more involved in the STR community? When you choose to support Stand to Reason with a monthly gift of $10 or more, you become a strategic partner in the work of equipping Christian ambassadors. Your monthly commitment makes you a part of a special group helping STR-trained Christians to graciously defend classical Christianity and classical Christian values. Your monthly gift helps us plan and manage STR's resources and provides consistent support to aid our planning and ongoing work. As a strategic partner, you'll enjoy an automatic 10% discount in our online store, access to a private Facebook group, and bi-monthly insider updates, so you'll get the inside scoop on what's going on in the ministry, and you'll know what you can pray for. Become a strategic partner in the Stand to Reason community today by visiting str.org/donate. Click How Often Will You Donate and choose Monthly. For personal assistance, you can email ocean@str.org. That's ocean@str.org.
All right, Greg Kokel here, live and lively on Stand to Reason. I'm doing my push-ups yesterday in my living room and my stretches, just staying healthy. You know, I'm thinking about this. And I don't know if other people are like this. I mean, I can't ask you guys. You're just a bunch of young punks, right? So, but other, like, older folk, which apparently I must be one of those. But it doesn't seem that way to me. It just seems like I'm the same guy. But I'm going to turn 70 in a couple of months. So I'm in the target zone, right? What's my daughter call it? The boomers. Baby boomers? There's some joke that they have about the coronavirus being the boomer remover or something like that. That's really bad. I'll realize she's talking about me. So I got to think about that, right? But I don't feel particularly vulnerable, and I'm pretty healthy except for, I mean, I got structural problems. I got weird back and weird legs, and you know, but I don't have bad lungs and bad heart. And I got to, you know, I'm still I still have, basically, usually have my wits and my memory about me, more or less. But I do try to keep my girlish figure, watching my diet and the likes. How did I get into this? Why am I talking about this? I don't know. Let's go to callers. In New York City, Joel. Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Greg. How are you?
Okay.
Just quick question before I ask my main question. Is your back issue a lower back issue or a like middle upper back issue?
It's lower back. I just don't have any discs left. I lost almost 2 inches of my height since high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's just they're gone, and so this kind of squeezes everything. And I had a little... go ahead.
I have a recommendation for you. I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I'm an instructor, and I train, like, well, not as much as I used to, but I train twice a day, generally speaking.
Oh, so wow.
My body takes a beating.
What do you mean, not as much as you used to? You used to train more than twice a day?
Well, what I'm saying is that's, like, when I'm at my most, that's what I'm doing. So I don't do it that much as regularly now as I used to. But
okay.
But, yeah, I've had back issues, lower back issues, since I was, like, 15, 16. I heard it running and just have always had issues since then. To the point where this past year I woke up one morning, I thought I was going to have to quit doing what I do because it was so bad. I was sleeping on the floor. And but anyways, I found this thing. I'm sure you've heard of, like decompression therapy.
Yeah, I've had that. I had it. Didn't do any good.
Non-invasive.
It's non-invasive decompression, right? I did it for
one of those
6 weeks.
Inversion tables.
No, it wasn't the table. It was a specialist who did that work. That they strap you into things, whatever. I do have one of those inversion things that I should use. Somebody gave it to me, but I haven't actually used it yet.
I've used the inversion table before. I didn't really feel like it helped me, although I didn't use it consistently for long. And I've heard negative things about it. But I got this thing. It's called Sit and Decompress. And you go to sitanddecompress.com. I make no money, but
all right. Well, I'll tell you what, Joel. Here, just send an email to Stand to Reason with the information, okay? Because I'm actually more interested in your question about evil. Pardon me.
Sorry, I just wanted to help you out.
Sure.
Lower back issue.
I appreciate that.
Anyways, sorry. I just wanted to, you know, if it can help you as much as it's helped me, then
all right.
Sorry. My question is basically, I was thinking about this. With the problem of evil and how one of the answers or one of the explanations for, you know, how God could maybe allow that or why he would allow that is so that we could develop characteristics like mercy and forgiveness and patience, you know, characteristics that we might not have been able to develop in a perfect world. And so it got me thinking that doesn't that reasoning or logic, wouldn't that apply to God too? And like basically in eternity past, how would he have those characteristics if, you know, there's no basic need for forgiveness amongst the Trinity? And then, you know, it got me thinking, wouldn't that almost then require him to even have us so that he could, if they somehow existed, so he could even have the ability to demonstrate them, right?
Yeah, well, you know, those are two. Okay, hold on. Those are two different questions. So let me jump in here and offer some thoughts. When you start with a creature who is morally innocent but not morally perfect, that is, he doesn't maximize all the virtues, then the idea of growth in virtues through some means makes sense. And so God then... allowing evil in the world so that certain virtues will grow morally in an individual who's not perfected in those virtues, well, that kind of fits. That kind of there's a common sensibility to that. Why doesn't it apply to God? Because God is not in the same position as human beings were, where human beings were morally innocent and God is morally innocent, but God is also morally perfect. You cannot he's not just He, as Bill Craig has pointed out, God is not just good, he is morally perfect. That is, there is nothing lacking morally in him. Indeed, he is the ground of morality. He's the core of it, if you will. He's the source of it. So everything about God is good. So there is no need for him, nor possibility even, of growing in these virtues through expressing them in a fallen world. So the big issue is there's a difference between man and God. Human beings are innocent, but not morally perfect in terms of maximizing the moral qualities. God is the maximally great moral creature. So there is no room for improvement, even in principle.
Okay. I think I understand what you're saying. It's just, I'm wondering how one would even have such a characteristic if there's no need for it. You understand what I mean? Like, how would you have the characteristic of mercy if there's not a need for mercy?
That doesn't mean... Well, there actually, as it turns out, there was a need for it. There's opportunity for it to be expressed. But these characteristics don't kind of present themselves in a utilitarian or pragmatic way. You know, I've got to pump iron here, because if I don't pump iron, I won't be able to carry my child. And if I don't have a child, what's the point of pumping iron? I mean, that makes sense in a certain way. But that's not the way it works with God. He doesn't have moral virtues so that when they're needed, they can be used in the future. He has those moral virtues because he is himself moral perfection. I'm not sure any other way I can put it.
I see that there's a limitation there, I think, in answering what I'm kind of questioning.
What I would say, and I'm going to have to run to a call, another call in a minute, but what I would say is that you're kind of comparing apples and oranges. Human being circumstances are different than God's circumstances, and that's why the things that lend themselves to moral growth in humans will not lend themselves to moral growth in God, because he doesn't grow morally. He's already maxed out. All right, Joel, thanks a lot for that call. Let's go to Hibbing, Minnesota, and Cade. I got a question for you, Cade.
Yeah?
What? Oh, hey, how old are you, Cade?
12.
Oh, we've talked before, haven't we?
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, it's nice to talk with you again.
Thank you.
What is happening there in Minnesota? Are you in the Minneapolis area?
No, I'm up north by the Iron Range.
By the Iron Range?
Yeah.
What's the Iron Range?
So, well, it's probably more of a local term then.
Okay.
So, have you ever heard of Chisholm, Minnesota?
Chisholm? No, I haven't. I've heard of, some of the big lakes, Lake Winnie, for example, that big giant lake. Are you north of Lake Winnie, Winnipesaukee?
Up in the northern part of Minnesota, there used to be an iron ore gold mine.
Oh.
And so that's why they call it the Iron Range, and there's a few rings of cities. Hibbing, Virginia, and Chisholm are all kind of in that.
Is it close to Duluth?
About an hour drive from Duluth.
Well, just a little north than that is the Quatico Superior National Forest.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of canoeing and crazy stuff like that.
Oh,
so,
yeah, it's beautiful there.
It's Winnebagoche, right? Is that the full name of Lake Winnie?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it is. I started to say Winnipesaukee, but that's in Maine or something like that. That's Winnebagoche. All right, Cade, what's up? What's on your mind?
So, the other day, my mom and her friend were talking about open theism and progressive Christianity.
Right.
So I was wondering, I'd like to know what that is, and then maybe how to take, in your words, the roof off of it.
Oh, well, that's great. There are two different things, and sometimes people who are progressive Christians may also be open theists, but those are different things, okay?
Okay.
So let's talk about open theism for a minute. We'll just speak about it in a general sense. You probably have learned from your folks that God knows everything.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the word that they use to describe that?
All-knowing.
All-knowing, or there's an omni. Omniscient. Okay. All-knowing.
Okay.
Same thing. All right. Great. And, this particular teaching called open theism is meant to take exception with the idea that God is all-knowing.
So they're basically saying that he's not.
Well, to be fair to them, I'd want to qualify that. This is the way I think is a fair, is an accurate way of putting it, that he doesn't know everything that that is going to take place. So human beings make actions, are going to make free will actions in the future, and God does not know what those free actions are going to be, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean, that's kind of the idea. There's a certain category of things that God does not actually know. Now, they would say God's still omniscient. And what they mean by that, though, is that God knows everything that can be known. But what can't be known is the free will actions of people in the future, and so therefore he doesn't know that. But that's not a limitation because it's not knowable on their view. The classical view is that God knows every single thing that's going to happen. And not only everything that's going to happen, but everything that possibly could happen, and everything that might happen given a certain set of circumstances. Now, theologians have fancy words for those. Sometimes I get them mixed up. So there's natural knowledge, there's free knowledge. Okay, so God's natural knowledge is everything that could possibly happen. God's free knowledge is everything that does actually take place or will take place.
Okay.
So it's possible for you to go to Disneyland, but you maybe never will, right? So I don't know. Have you been to Disneyland?
Yeah, too late.
Oh, wow, too late, yeah. In Florida, though, Disney World?
Yes, Florida.
Oh, okay, I said Disneyland. That's the original one here in Southern Cal, which, by the way, is closed down at the moment.
Probably Disneyland, too.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, so especially in Florida. So... So God knows all the things that actually are the case, his free knowledge, and then you got his middle knowledge, and that is things that might take place but didn't take place. Okay. So anyway, those are the kind of categories of knowledge. But according to open theism, there are certain things that God doesn't know, and the reason they say this is because it appears in Scripture that sometimes God is caught by surprise by certain things.
Okay.
And he then changes his mind in light of those different things. Okay? So that's the way the Scripture talks about it, that God changes his mind. And so, therefore, he can only change his mind if he didn't know what was going to happen and had a different mind based on what he knew. And then when he got new information, he changed it. Okay, so they have a reason for this, and so I'll tell you one example of taking the roof off that I used with Greg Boyd, who is a theologian who holds this view, and I asked him if Jesus knew or did God know that Judas was going to betray him, okay.
Okay.
Now, it's taking the roof off because basically I'm saying, according to your view, if God doesn't know the free will actions of people in the future, then God couldn't know that Judas was going to betray Jesus.
Okay.
Okay. But I use it as an example because that seems pretty bizarre, that God didn't know Jesus would betray Judas? I'm sorry, Judas would betray Jesus? Got
yeah.
it back up. And so, because it seems like he did know that.
Yeah.
You know, so this is what, and this is why I asked the question that I did. And what he said to me was, as I recall, he didn't actually know it, but it was a pretty good guess, something along that line.
Okay.
Which would be consistent with his view. And maybe he's changed his view. This was many years ago. And maybe he's changed his view since then. I don't know. But he's fairly well known as an open theist kind of person. So that's that part, open theism. All right?
Okay.
Got that? Okay, now progressive Christianity is a very different kind of animal. Progressive Christianity is something very, very popular today. It's growing in popularity. And And it is very appealing to a lot of people because so many of the things about classical Christianity that seem uncomfortable in the 21st century, in the context of the culture we have now and what people value in the culture and what's politically correct, so many of those things that are politically incorrect according to the culture with Christianity, Christians are beginning to shift their views on. Okay?
Okay.
So what do you think?
Go ahead. You're kind of distorting Christianity then?
Yes. That would be a great way of putting it.
Okay.
Okay. So, for example, what would be some view right now of Christianity, classical Christianity, that is not really popular in the culture?
I don't know. I think that's a hard one for me.
Okay. Well, there are actually a bunch of them. We can just take all of the sexual issues, which I won't go into details with, but there's a whole bunch of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
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 Yeah,
you're probably aware of that.
Mm-hmm, now they're coming to me.
Okay. Or what, a same-sex marriage?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And other things relating to homosexuality. Okay. So that's kind of broadly under the sexual issues. What about Jesus being the only way of salvation?
Yep, that's a big one.
Yeah, that's a problem. What about the Bible being the Word of God?
That's another one.
That's another one. And so on and on. What about abortion?
Yep.
Yep, that's a problem. So there are a lot of these issues that our culture is saying no to. And because Christians are saying yes to them because they're part of God's command or God's world or God's revelation, there's a point of conflict. Bang, 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 bang. Between the world and the Christians who are trying to stand for Jesus.
Okay?
Okay. Now, progressive Christianity, in a certain way, is going to progress away from the old Christianity and become a new Christianity.
Okay.
Probably a simple way of looking at it, Cade. We're going to be Christians, but we're not going to. But we're not going to, you know, say that homosexuality is wrong. Or we're going to. We think it's okay for people to marry whoever they love, and we think that abortion, well, that's a woman's right. And after all, the Bible's got all kinds of screwy things in it. We're not going to stand behind. So we're not going to say that's the inspired Word of God, and Jesus being the only way of salvation. Please come on, look at all these other religions in the world. Are you kidding me? That's so close-minded, that's so narrow, that's so intolerant.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how if they make these changes at the points where culture is pushing back really hard, the culture is not going to push back at them so hard.
Okay.
They're going to be more accepting of these enlightened Christians, you know, that now these guys aren't so bad. Oh, they believe in Jesus and love, and they're nice people, but they don't believe in that nasty stuff like taking a woman's right to abortion away, or people can't marry who they want, or people can't sleep with who they want, and, you know, people can't have abortion. We already mentioned that, and on and on and on, you know. They're not, Jesus is the only way. No, they don't believe that stuff. So we like the progressive Christians.
Okay.
So I've just offered a description.
Then how do you show them?
Well, there's a couple of different things. One thing I want to mention is it's hard to always judge somebody's motivations for going in that direction. I think that some people, they just don't want to feel the heat or the pressure from the culture.
The prejudice.
Persecution, whatever, yeah, and they're just going to go along with it. Other people, though, are actually genuinely questioning whether the Bible is inspired, whether Jesus is the only way. And this is why we have apologetics, to help them out. I think one of the best tactics, this isn't taking the roof off so much, but it's another one in the new book, the new tactics book. I don't know. Do you have that?
Mm-hmm, that's the one I'm reading.
Okay, good. Well, under the mini tactics section is a tactic called What a Friend We Have in Jesus. Okay?
Okay.
I like the name of that song. Do you know that song?
Uh-huh. It's one of the first ones I learned.
No kidding. Well, I'm going to tell you a little inside secret, which I don't think I've ever mentioned here on the radio, or maybe I haven't one. My great, I don't know if I get the number of greats right here, but my great-great-great uncle wrote that song.
No kidding.
Yeah, and there's always two. His name is Converse. Last name is oh, it's escaping me right now. And Scrivens. It's Converse and Scrivens because one did the music and one did the...
Was he a violin player?
I don't know about that. I don't know. Scrivens and Converse. I'll think about his first name in a minute. Anyway, my mom told me that after I became a believer because it's on her side of the family. My grandpa's name is Converse. So Charles Converse. And then Scrivens was the other guy. Any event, that the point of what a friend we have in Jesus is to try to take advantage, or put it this way, let Jesus do the arguing for you, okay? Let Jesus do the arguing for you when you can.
Okay.
And the reason is even if people don't like you or don't like me, they still like Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And see, progressive Christians like Jesus. All right? So then, since they like Jesus, that's why they call themselves Christians, even if they don't hold to all this other stupid stuff. That's the way they look at it. They still like Jesus. So now what we're going to do is we're going to use Jesus to make the point. So when it comes to something like all the sexual issues in marriage, I might ask them this. I say, okay, like if they're progressive, first I'm going to ask them, what does that mean, progressive? And let them explain to me, okay?
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Exactly. And then once I got a fairly clear idea, some of these issues, then I'm going to ask them a question based on something I know in Scripture. Now, especially if I can get Jesus to weigh in. So Jesus... in Matthew 19 is talking about marriage and remarriage, a divorce and remarriage. And here's what he says. He says, from the beginning, it hasn't been this way. Here's the way it's been from the beginning. And I'm going to give you a little summary of what Jesus said, Kate, but you can look it up there for yourself in Matthew 19.
Okay.
Jesus says that what God intends is one man with one woman becoming one flesh, and that's sex, for one lifetime. That's why he tells them not to get divorced. One man with one woman becoming one flesh for one lifetime. Notice that in that statement in Matthew 19, Jesus covers all the bases. He says that the sexes are male and female, right?
Okay.
And they're made for each other, not men for men and women for women. And that becoming one flesh is for that kind of relationship, not for boyfriends and girlfriends or for same-sex partners. It's for a man and a woman in a lifelong commitment. That's what God intends.
Okay, then what would you say to them if they came back with something like, well, some of the stuff in the Bible is a bunch of baloney?
Okay, well, here's the question I would ask first, is I'll sum this up and I'll say, do you think that Jesus was mistaken? That's what I want to ask them. Do you think that Jesus was mistaken? Now, if they say to me, well, some of the stuff in the Bible is a bunch of baloney, I'm going to ask them, well, I'm not talking about some of the stuff in the Bible. I'm talking about this statement about Jesus. So do you think Jesus was mistaken here? See, because Jesus is very clear. Okay.
Okay.
Now, what they might want to say is, well, Jesus didn't really say that. Really? Well, why would you say that Jesus never said that? Well, because you can't trust the Bible. Okay, well, maybe you can't trust some of the Bible, but what you're saying is we can't trust this part of the Bible. So why are you saying we can't trust this part of the Bible? And I know they trust the Bible in some parts because they quote it when it suits them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to help them to see is, you know, you're playing a game here. You don't like what this says, so you're just going to say, well, you can't trust that, when you don't have any good reason to say that's not trustworthy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, every once in a while you get a phrase or a word that's in the New Testament, for example, that isn't in most of the old manuscripts. But we know about those, and so we're not banking on those for anything. What I'm trying to do with my questions is to help them to see that there's pretty good reason to believe Jesus actually said this, because it's in the text that you guys quote when it's convenient. But he doesn't say what you guys say. So do you think he was mistaken? That's my question.
Okay.
And then see where it goes from there. Make sense?
Yeah, sounds good.
Hey, Kate, it's great talking to you. Is it snowing there now?
No, it hasn't. It snowed last night, but besides that, it hasn't snowed much anymore. It's really getting kind of messy and icky out.
It's trying to be spring.
Yeah, and then we're going to have a second winter in Minnesota.
You are? Is that the way it works?
Oh, yeah. We always have it. Always starts melting, and then we have some big snowstorm. We have snow for about 4 more weeks.
Oh, then you know it's coming. Okay, the problem with all the snow up north there is that my pier is going to be underwater again in northern Wisconsin. I know it. I'm going to have to raise it because the lake keeps coming up. Well, Cade, good talking to you up there in
the Iron,
what do you call it, the Iron Belt?
Iron Range.
Oh, the Iron Range. Okay, that's a new one for me. All right, Cade, all the best to you.
Yes, you too.
Thanks
stay
a lot.
Stay safe and stay healthy.
Okay, I'll do my best. So long, buddy.
Bye.
Oh, that's really sweet. All right, well, it's time to take a break. A real quick one, then we got more calls. And anybody who's on board now, who I don't get to this hour, stay with us because I got another hour of broadcasting here. We'll talk to you. Greg Kokel here on Stand to Reason.
You can connect with STR on social media to keep up to date on all the latest, including articles, videos, events, and giveaways. You'll easily find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Interact with STR staff, post comments, get involved with other like-minded Christians, weigh in by responding to some of the issues of the day, and see what's going on behind the scenes. Social media is your gateway to all the latest from STR, including speaking events, new podcasts, resources, articles, and what's on our mind today. Follow STR online and find all our social media platforms when you visit str.org and click Connect at the bottom of the page.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
Back at you here, a little powwow about a question coming up that is news to me, but we'll take a look at it. Let's go to Noah in Seattle, Washington. Hello, Noah.
Hey, how you doing, Greg?
I should ask you how you're doing, since one-third of the deaths from coronavirus came from one building in Seattle.
That is true, and I live right next to it in Kirkland.
Oh, well, don't breathe too hard into your phone. All right.
Yeah, I'm basically stuck in my house at this point.
Yeah, I can see why. Really, it's right by where you live?
Yeah, right by my school as well.
Huh, are people kind of freaked out in that neighborhood?
Not so much. I haven't seen, like, as clear aisles near stores or Safeway near my house, but for the most part.
Huh.
Not as much as I'd assume.
When you said school, did you mean high school?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how old are you, Noah?
19.
So you'd be a senior?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, great. How can I help you?
Well, I listen to a lot of videos, like with Frank Turek on the cross-examined.
Uh-huh.
And I'll write down the questions and pause it and try to answer them myself or on, like, STR app.
Wow, that is very cool. Good for you. That is one of the best ways. I do the same thing sometimes.
Yeah.
And that is one of the best ways to sharpen your skills. That's a great idea.
Yeah. I was listening to a debate between Frank Turek and Christopher Hitchens.
Uh-huh.
And Frank Turek didn't have time to respond to what Christopher Hitchens had said. And so I was curious because it's sort of ironic, something he brought up. He said basically he can't believe in a God, or can't believe that God exists when God basically says you have free will, but you don't have the choice to have free will or not. You just do.
Oh, so this is something Christopher Hitchens brought up in a debate.
Yes.
Okay, Christopher Hitchens is a very smart man, but this is not a smart response. Okay?
Yeah, there is a lot of things that I noticed that he said that I was like,
It's almost frustrating for me to hear this. I was just last week, I was watching the movie Collision, which is a movie about a series of debates that he had. Oh, for goodness sake, who's the guy, John, up in Collision, in the movie Collision, debating? Yeah. He's the reform guy up in Idaho. Oh, you know, Wilson. What's his first name?
I haven't seen it.
Wait just a second. Tell me. Doug Wilson. Yeah, okay, so there's Doug Wilson. I have some mental block against his name. He's a significant player in lots of arenas, homeschool, including, and private Christian school, classical school. Anyway, they're talking together, and there's, so in this debate, he says to a Jewish guy on the stage, how dare you say that your point of view is the true point of view and everybody else is wrong? Well, of course, this is precisely what Christopher Hitchens believes, that his own view is the true point of view and everybody else is wrong. So when I heard that, I was shook my head a little bit, like, are you kidding me? You think this is a profound kind of objection or concern or a legitimate assault on your opponent here? But apparently he thought so. So like I said, he's a smart guy, but that kind of response is not smart, because the one you gave me is, if I understand it, well, God gave me free will, but he didn't give me the free will to choose whether I wanted the free will or not.
Yeah.
Okay. To me, that's like somebody saying, I didn't choose to be born, so I can't be responsible for my behavior. Mm. Now, he's not saying that thing, but that's just as silly as far as I'm concerned. This is what teenagers say when they don't want to do what their parents tell. I didn't choose to be born, you know. Well, nobody gets to choose. It's not in the realm of anybody's choice, you know. And so when you think about this objection, okay, what if God answered Christopher Hitchens' concern? So Christopher Hitchens says, I didn't choose to have free will. God didn't give me the choice to choose to have free will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what if God said, okay, I'm giving you the choice to choose to have free will?
And then he says no.
No, well, he's already got free will now. If God gives him the choice to choose anything, then he's got free will. And they said, well, you didn't give me the choice to choose whether I get to choose to have free will. Okay, I'll give you the choice to choose to choose. Oh, well, you didn't give me the choice to choose whether I get to choose to choose whether I get to choose. You see the problem here. We're just falling backwards into an infinite regress that is just plain old silly.
Yeah.
I didn't get a chance to choose my own free will. Why is that? That, to be honest, that objection is undignified. It is beneath his I think, his native talents. He could come up with better stuff than this, but this objection does not even make any sense, because, like I said, I tried to characterize it for you. You end up falling backwards into an infinite regress. He would have to have the ability to choose in order to have the ability to choose.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why this is a nonsense kind of challenge. It's a faux challenge. It's like asking, well, why can God make a rock so big he can't lift it?
Well,
that's not a real question. That's like saying, can God beat up God? Sorry, go ahead.
I've thought about a couple analogies like that, where it's like, can you shoot an infinitely powerful bullet into an infinitely indestructible shield? Like, that's not a situation that's possible.
Yeah. These are only fanciful word games people are playing. These are not meaningful challenges to the existence of God. It's not. And it frustrates me. I would love to say, oh, here's what you say to Christopher Hitchens, but he's just uttered something that is almost nonsensical. There was some famous ancient guy, maybe Augustine or somebody, when approached with the question of could God create a rock so big he can't lift it, who just simply said, no, he was too busy making hell for people who ask stupid questions. Now, I'm not recommending you give that response to anybody, but I'm just saying, Noah, it is not characteristically a good idea to say that's a dumb question, but some questions are just dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're dumb because they're not real questions. They can't be answered because there's no genuine question in there. And this is an example of that. I didn't ask to be born. Okay. So what? Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't have the freedom to choose freedom. What?
Yeah. And then, you mind if I ask one last question?
What was that?
So basically right now I'm in a geology class at my school.
Yeah.
And it's based off a creationist perspective. And their view is basically just the Bible teaches one flood and one flood, that's all, and every evidence evolution has is invalid, and this is why. That's basically what they teach. But I've also had a lot of other Christians near me say they believe in progressive creation, that a lot of evidence does point to God guiding evolution. And I don't know how to bring that up in class.
Sure. Okay, let me just say this. I've only got 20 seconds to go here, so let me just say this, Noah. Yeah. I do not think that there's evidence that shows that God guides evolution. And in fact, the notion of God guiding evolution, if the word evolution it goes by the standard definition, turns out to be a contradiction in terms, because evolution by nature is not a guided process. And if somebody wants to claim that it's guided, they're going to have to say, well, what exactly did God do to guide it? And if you can't say what God did, it doesn't make any sense to say that God did it in that way. So something to chew on there, Noah. Maybe we can talk a little bit more later. Stay safe up there in Seattle, right next to that old people's home. But you're a young buck, so you're going to be okay, I think. Greg Kokel here. Stand to reason. Give him heaven. Bye-bye.